we try not to hype things on this show, but the president had proposed a 1.4% federal pay raise. And one of the appropriations committees, I think the Senate, has authorized it, approved it. But it's still got to go through Congress. And as you know from reading the newspapers, USA Today,
I've heard something about it.
USA Today in particular, they've been hammering away at overpaid feds, how many are paid over $150,000. And there seems to be a strong movement in
Congress.
Just
to be fair,
now,
USA Today mostly presenting the data, and then folks like Heritage and Cato and those folks saying overpaid.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Yeah, that's true. But you question where the data came from.
Right.
It's even a question.
Well, and this data is very difficult to ascertain. It's very an apples to apples comparison. Very hard to make.
You're comparing Walmart to NASA.
Right.
In some cases. So there you go. I always say Uncle Sam doesn't do real retail.
Right.
But at any rate, seems to be a strong move afoot in Congress now to come in and say, okay, let us, members of Congress, take a 10% pay cut. And while we're at it, we're going to freeze federal pay,
right,
or at least no raise next year. And, of course, the Deficit Reduction Committee, the chairman's mark, that would be co-chairman Erskine Bowles, a Democrat from the Clinton administration, and Alan Simpson, a Republican, former member of the Senate, their chairman's mark said they proposed a number of things, including a three-year federal pay raise and a 10% reduction. So this Congress normally in a session like this where they haven't approved appropriations bills, that would be what they would try to get done. But in this case, they've got a public relations problem where they feel they have a lot of lame ducks they're lame ducks. They're not coming back. And they may have a message to send to the country or to the constituency that we're going to try to save money in government, start with these government workers.
And this is the civilian side. On the defense side, the administration, lots of folks been saying, hold on, don't increase salaries. And yet Congress was the one who increased salaries year after year.
That's right, yeah. And they, you know, it's interesting about federal unions tend to blame the Bush administration for everything.
Right.
But President Clinton set the tone. And his first year in office, he recommended a zero federal pay raise. And the Congress, Steny Hoyer and Jim Moran and Frank Wolf went around him. And they did that every year. The president proposed a smaller raise and was called for by the data. And then President Bush just simply picked up from that and did the same thing. But President Obama has proposed the 1.4% raise, but it's not a done deal yet.
This particular year on the salary issue seems particularly complex.
That's exactly right, and that's a good way to put it, because normally, you know, in the media tends to hype things. And make it, you know, the 24-hour news cycle. It's everything's a sporting event. You know,
right.
Drive to the wire, slam dunk, all that kind of thing.
Well, you almost, it's like the forum in Rome.
Well,
we have the lions and the tigers and the bears, oh my.
And I always sort of sit back and pretend to be a sage and say, this has happened before, don't worry about it, shut down, don't worry about it. This year, I don't say that. This year, I think anything is open.
And they're using the F word, furlough, for the first time in number of years that I've heard, and also potential layoffs, which I don't really remember happening in a very long time.
No, I think the layoff is, I think people are misinterpreting it. I think what they're talking about is a freeze, a hiring freeze. And if you cut a federal employment by 10%, you could do that largely via attrition. Yeah. The problem is, and Congress has tried this before, is when you impose a hiring freeze,
it's
people who
are
in the job stay on the job.
Right.
People who would normally have retired, psychologically, they say, I better stay put until it's off.
What?
So it kind of is self-defeating.
And my argument on this always has been, hold on, let's get the right people in the right places. What we really need to do is decide what is inherently governmental, to use our inside the beltway term, and make sure we have the right people doing those jobs, rather than like we did in the Clinton years, where we just hacked away at procurement people, and we're still paying the cost of that.
270,000, and they what they called overhead jobs, which included HR.
Yeah, right.
And look at the state of HR in government today.
We're still paying the price.
It's terrible,
And so it's much better to think about this in a strategic way rather than just one of these across the board freezes where, you know, hold on.
The danger is, I think many politicians figure they don't get points or votes for being statesmanlike.
Right. Yeah.
They get them for making these pronouncements that I hacked those bureaucrats by 10% in Washington. So
the other thing that's going on, the other huge issue that's going on, is this is open season. We're now a couple weeks into it. Tomorrow on your turn, you're going to be talking about open season. and we always talk about most people don't sort of let it ride.
Yeah. And, well, and what we all do best is nothing.
Right.
And this is particularly hard on retirees because, you know, many of them are quite elderly. They've been in the same health plan for years. Most retirees are in one of the Blue Cross options. But they've been in the same plans for years. When the premiums go up, they grumble about it, but they stick with it. Walton Francis says you can get comparable coverage in a number of plans by carefully shopping. The key, of course, for everybody is to stay in the network, to stick with your preferred provider right. option. If you want to have your own doctor, you know, go to it, but you're going to be paying more for it. And also he's going to explain the difference between an HMO and a preferred provider. HMO, they treat you. It's managed care, if you will. Lower premiums. People love them. People who are in them love them. Aetna is rated very highly. GEHA, MDIPA. The fee-for-service plans, however, you pay higher premiums, but if you want to go to the Mayo Clinic, you can go to the Mayo Clinic.
Yeah. And I always think part of the challenge is, yes, we're very good at doing nothing, but also part of the challenge is we hear HMOs, we hear all these terms, and it can be very, very intimidating.
It's very intimidating, and now you have new terms, HD for high deductible, and what does that mean? Well, we know what high deductible means, but what does it mean in a health plan? And consumer-driven.
And what does it mean in my real life? You know, if I get hit by a bus, high deductible, and I mean, I'm have a lot of costs here. What does it really mean?
Right, and he's going to explain all these various terms.
Right.
Where do flexible spending accounts figure into it? And what about this new thing now where any 26-year-old child can join the FEHBP, even if that 26-year-old is married and has children of his or her own? That person, the child of the Fed, can join it. His spouse and children cannot join it. Interesting times.